The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55 KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRZ, The Talk Station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. You can find us online, ballisticradio.com or facebook.com/ballisticradio. As always, if you have something you'd like to ask, you can call in at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255 if you're listening online or out of the area. I'm going to try and get to your calls probably a little later in the show. We're going to have a really cool guest, Lieutenant Chuck Haggard from Topeka, Kansas PD, in studio tonight. My co-host, Andy Ulrich. Andy, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, good seeing you, Andy. Glad you could make it down. It was kind of nice the snow didn't start quite yet.
Yes, the white death.
Oh, yeah. So tonight we're going to be talking about concealed carry and some issues that folks probably don't always think about or maybe just challenge some of the ideas that folks have about concealed carry. We're going to be getting Chuck's perspective on that, which should be pretty cool just because instead of just talking to another guy at the gun shop or the range or whatever, Chuck's been a cop almost as long as I've been alive. So he should have a pretty good take on the topic as far as that goes. So a couple things, I guess, to think about. Concealed carry considerations, I like to call them. You need to have an idea as far as, you know, what kind of firearm do you want to be carrying? How do you want to be carrying it? What are your goals, or are they predictable goals as far as that goes? Obviously, you know, Andy, I guess people carry mainly just to give themselves a little warm and fuzzy feeling, or what do you think?
Well, I think it falls into two groups. I think you have some people who are truly concerned for their safety and their safety of their family, and then I think you have a group who carry because it's something cool to do. And probably another part of that group is so that they can carry their pretty little safe queen toy.
Oh, you know, no such thing as a safe queen, at least not in my safe. You know, so it's like Andy said, why do folks carry? Well, folks carry because they got a threat facing them, or they perceive that there is a possibility of a threat. The way I kind of like to think about it, actually, is, hey, I got seatbelts in my car. I got airbags in my car. I've got, you know, a fire extinguisher at home. I've got smoke detectors, all that good stuff. So if I've acknowledged that I might be in a car accident, there might be a fire at my home, you know, I've got insurance so that if my stuff gets taken, it gets replaced. Well, that's just another form of insurance. Is that firearm is your insurance for when you run into the seedier side of human beings and all their wonderfulness and glory. You don't ever know when that's going to happen. You know, and I'm sure that everyone's been somewhere at some point and gone, oh, this isn't that good of a neighborhood. You know, maybe I should, I kind of wish I felt a little better about this. Well, the thing about everybody is that, you know, you hear a lot of folks, what's the number one thing you hear, Andy, as far as carrying a gun goes?
Oh, I probably won't need to carry that to X.
Yeah.
To the grocery store. Oh, it's 7 a.m. Nobody's going to be there to harm me at the grocery store.
Oh, that's right. I only carry when I feel like I need to. Well, the problem with I only carry when I feel like I need to, and I'm going to steal the ideas of some better men than me, and I'm going to stand on their shoulders here. But best example I ever heard, Todd Lewis Green, great guy that I have not yet met, but I hope to one day. Paraphrase here, you wear your seatbelt all the time. You don't put it on when the tires are squealing and the metal's starting to scream, do you? And, you know, it's that same kind of idea.
I don't think I've ever been in a car accident where I knew a car accident was going to happen.
Would you maybe not have done it if you knew there was going to result in an accident?
Probably would not have left the house that day.
Oh, that's kind of, hey, if you only carry a gun when you think you're going to need a gun, why not just not go there in the first place? You know, if I think I'm going to need a gun, handgun's not my first choice. Rifling some buddies sounds like a better idea, or like Andy said, just stay at home that day. It maybe isn't your day. So, you know, everybody, just try and get a more realistic idea about what needs to be done as far as your day-to-day goes. If you're going to carry a gun, and I'm not saying everyone should. That's a decision you have to make. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, oh, everyone needs to carry one. Well, that's not true. I've met some people that don't have any business around guns. I'm not, obviously, I'm biased. I'm a very pro-firearms person. But if you're carrying for the wrong reasons, like Andy said, you know, your Safe Queen looks better in a holster so you can tell all your buddies about it. You know, we don't live in Texas. Barbecue guns aren't really as popular here as they are down there. You know, it'd be nice if they were, but they're not. You know, just have a realistic idea about things. Either decide to carry or decide not to carry. It's not really a sometime thing. You know, just do it all the time or don't do it at all. And the reason for that, you don't know where something bad's going to happen to you. If you did know where it was going to happen to you, you probably wouldn't go there in the first place. You know, as far as carrying a gun, Andy, in your experience, found any places where it's easier to do or not easier to do, or what do you think?
I think, you know, it all depends on, you know, what you do for a living. There's definitely times where my job would not permit me to do it physically, not location, but just the physical act of having the gun on me and me putting me in position. So do I carry every day at work? No, it's not physically possible for me. Not because I can't hide the gun, because I'm in a position where I can't be laying on my gun welding or working on something in a confined space.
Oh, wow.
Am I going to need my MMP9 300 foot underneath the 75? No, probably not.
I don't know, man. They got those mutant alligators down there, I hear.
I haven't found one yet.
Okay, but probably a 9 wouldn't be the first thing for that anyway. Right. You know, also a fun game to play at home, folks. I'm trying not to do it tonight, but if you want to play a drinking game, take a shot every time I say if you end up going to the hospital, though, because of it, not my fault. So I'm trying to fix that, though. Like I said, coming up next, we're going to have Chuck Haggard from Topeka, Kansas Police Department, Lieutenant Chuck Haggard, since he's on the line listening probably right about now, and I don't want to use the wrong title. He's, you know, I've met him before. I've actually run into him online for a couple years now. Really interesting guy. He's got a lot of, you know, common sense stuff, you would think, but you know, sometimes it's just better hearing it from someone that's actually been there and lived through it. Like I said, been a police officer almost as long as I've been alive. Not quite. I got a couple years on that tally, but not by much. But we're going to be talking about just his experience as far as in his jobs, things he's seen as far as you know, good ideas, bad ideas, just what works, what doesn't work, just his thoughts on that. So it should be pretty good. He's going to be coming up next. Like I said, if you want to call in, you can do that. We probably won't be taking your calls to the end of the show. Anyway, up next, Chuck Haggard, Cops Perspective on Concealed Carry. You're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. I got Chuck holding on the line here. I'm going to try and get Chuck on. Mr. Haggard, are you there?
I am.
Hey, Chuck, appreciate you coming on the show. Hopefully you guys, I heard you guys got a lot of snow out your way. So,
well, it's melting quite a bit right now. We've got a sunny day, so it's not as bad as some other people have been hit from what I've been watching on the weather.
Yeah, apparently we're supposed to get a little later tonight. So, Chuck, if you don't mind, just go over a little bit of your background. Now, you're a lieutenant with the Topeka, Kansas Police Department currently, correct?
I am. I've been there 26 years, a little over 26 years. I'm going to throw out a disclaimer that anything I say tonight will not be the official position of my police department and only my opinion. Don't want to get hemmed up on something like that.
Oh, that's fine. I appreciate them letting you come on at all. So,
since starting on the TPD, started out as a patrol officer, spent my entire time in uniform, except for a 3.5-year stint where I was our range master and armorer for the department. We're about 300 sworn, give or take, depending on the kind of manpower we're able to keep up. Like a lot of places, we have trouble keeping enough people between, you know, recruiting and hiring and retirements and things like that. Worked my way through the ranks, spent time as a field training officer, sergeant, and now as a lieutenant. Like I said, I was a range master for a while. I was responsible for all of the firearms training and maintenance for my department. Spent 18 years on our SWAT team. Looking over some stats, 18 years I was on the team, I had about 2,000 high-risk warrants that we served, various other activities like barricaded suspects, hostage jobs, things like that.
So a little later when we start talking about home invasions, you've got pretty practical experience about how those work and don't work, huh?
So. On both ends of it, I guess I have invaded homes and have been the investigating officer on criminal home invasion. So I guess I can look at it from both sides.
Yeah, well, and that should – I'm probably going to try and cover that the second segment if you can stay on the line for that long. But the first thing I kind of wanted to get into – so – you know, people don't think of Topeka as the crime capital of the world, obviously, but you guys are a pretty busy department from what I hear. I'm sure you've seen a lot of things in the last 26-odd years. I was just curious as far as your take on safe neighborhoods. Do they exist? Do they not exist? I mean, when should you be carrying a gun, not carrying a gun? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I was listening earlier. You were talking about the concept of I'm going to carry a gun when I think I'm going to need a gun.
Mm-hmm.
We carry handguns because they're portable and they're handy and they're concealable. And you can almost always find a handgun that will fit your mode of dress and what you have to do. Like I jog with a handgun, and it might be smaller than the one I normally carry, but I'm jogging. I've still got my gun with me. I have run into people that I know professionally while I'm out jogging. I've had to deal with big, mean dogs. Other instances where I've been jogging and had need for a gun. The idea that you should only carry a handgun when you think you're going to need it, it just doesn't make sense to me. In my line of work, a handgun is what I carry every day because I can't run around with a gun that's truly effective. When I think I'm going to need a gun, there's an AR-15 or a shotgun in my hands, and I'm taking friends with me. You know, it might be if I have a hot call, there might be four or five other cops, and they all have long guns as well. So if I thought I was going to need a gun, I would bring big guns and lots of other people with big guns as well. And while you were talking, I was reflecting on instances where I have been off duty. Because for cops, as I think you've listened in on Tom Gibbons' talk about citizen, the people that he has trained concealed carry that have been involved in shootings, the dynamics of a civilian self-defense shooting are typically quite a bit different than a police officer-involved shooting, because the person doing the shooting is often the primary victim of a violent crime that is in progress. And that's where it's different, where the police officers are involved. At the times that I have needed a gun and been off duty, that same dynamic has been what I have been a part of. One instance, I don't know about your part of the country, but small towns in Kansas are very, very leave it to beaver for the most part. There's a small town near where I live that I was talking to one of the city constables, And his crime spree that he was investigating was they had a series of bicycle thefts, and somebody was throwing rocks and had broken some windows.
Oh, that sounds like a call out the SWAT team right there, you know, try and get that handled as quick as possible. You know?
No, it was literally much more, you know, and we know you're being sarcastic, but it was much more, Andy and Barney and Mayberry type thing. So when I think of small towns, that's what I think of. So one day my wife and I are headed to visit her grandma, and I don't want to disparage anybody's town, but we stop along the way in a small town. I remember the city limit sign, population 2,700. So that's the type of town that I'm used to. It's a small town, you know, minimal crime, if any. Stop at convenience store, have to run and use the bathroom. I'm headed back to my car, and I hear a guy yell behind me, and very disheveled-looking guy, what I would typically describe, I mean, if we're going to profile, we're going to call him a crackhead. He's running up behind me. I can't really understand what he's talking about, but I hear money, and I realize that his right hand is wrapped up in a towel.
Mm.
And the first thing I thought of is, you know, like a Godfather type thing where you wrap the gun up or you use a pillow to try and, you know, muffle the sound of your gunshot should it go to that.
Right.
I turn around, see the guy coming across the lot at me. I go into holy crap mode because, frankly, I got caught somewhere between white and yellow in that situation and while I was walking back to my car. And so I'm turning, I'm going for my gun. He realized immediately what was going on. He starts backpedaling, then he spins on his heels and takes off running.
It's funny how I got a similar experience coming out of a Walmart where you've got someone approaching you and they're coming in a lot faster than they need to. And as soon as you start that draw stroke, if they've been around them at all, they know what that is. And sometimes don't want any part of it. Unfortunately, you can't always plan on that, not wanting any part of it. So, I mean, it's funny how you get out of that. Well, I'm kind of relaxed right now, so you're not as paying as much attention. And that's always when you get surprised is when you're not paying attention, I guess.
Well, and then, you know, one of the couple of the cases that I've had, one time I ended up having to pull my gun. And I was in one of the very nicest, highest dollar hotels in the Kansas City area. And it turned into a situation where it was an attempted person's robbery where I was going to be the target of it. Now, Kansas City is a big metro area, but, you know, not to disparage Kansas City, but all big towns or all big cities have, you know, certain level of crime to them. And I don't think Kansas City's any worse than anywhere else. But the fact that if I was in a hotel, you know, I happen to be at a meeting at a hotel where the cheap rooms are like $225 a night.
Right.
Very, very swanky hotel. Not the type of place where you would expect that, you know, I'm going to a bad place. I'm making the little air quotes now as I say that.
I heard them, actually.
Yeah.
I could definitely tell.
Not the type of place where you would expect, I'm going to go looking for trouble. You know, I wasn't headed for the Hell's Angels biker bar or anything like that. So virtually every time I've needed a gun in an off-duty capacity has not been a place where I would have expected to need a gun.
Right. And it's that whole idea that, you know, if I were a criminal, I don't know that I would necessarily pick on the other disenfranchised folks that I live with or around in the not-as-good neighborhood. I think I'd probably go to the nicer neighborhood where maybe there were nicer things that if I wanted to take those, I'd be able to. It makes sense to me. So, but
and that is very common. I don't know if you've ever heard of a pretty famous criminal guy named Willie. I may be throwing the name off here. I believe it's Willie Sutton. Anyway, they were doing a big back in the 60s and 70s, you know, they're looking into criminology and what's the psychology of why do people commit crimes. So they're really trying to dig into this. And they've got this cat that eventually got picked up, and he had an outrageous number of bank robberies, you know, like 80 or 90 of them. So they want to interview this guy, and they're trying to get into his head, you know, did your mom not love you enough, or, you know, did your dad beat you as a child? What brought you to this life of crime? So they ask him, well, why do you rob banks? And he says, because that's where the money's at.
Well, yeah, Jesus.
It was one of those, like, you know, dumb moments. That's where I rob places that have a lot of money, because that's, you know.
Oh, yeah. And it makes perfect sense if you actually take a minute to stop and think about it. You know, it's kind of like, I think there's a recent article that was put out, one of the recent spree killings. And I'm not going to mention which specific one, just because I don't like giving them any more attention than they've already received by everyone else. Mm-hmm. But the gentleman that perpetrated that had selected the location because it was a gun-free zone. Hey, there are my air quotes right there, so I guess we're all doing them tonight. But it's just funny, you know, folks, it's as much as we'd like to think these people are dumb, well, yeah, okay, some of them are, but some of them have put a little bit of thought into this, and they have a pretty good idea what works and what doesn't work. And what we're necessarily expecting or assuming about them is not necessarily a good thing. I'd like to actually get into that a little bit more, Chuck, but we've got to take a commercial break if you want to hold the line just for a minute. We'll talk about that some more, maybe some home invasions if we have time. You're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
It's heartwarming to know that there's still a place where you can turn for truth. 55 KRC. The talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We are still talking to Lieutenant Chuck Haggard from the Topeka, Kansas Police Department. Chuck, you still there?
I am.
Excellent. I've got one more question for you, and then Andy's got a couple things he'd like to ask you. You were just talking briefly about no safe areas. You try and have a gun with you pretty much no matter what when you're allowed to. Have you noticed any difference as far as, now obviously as a police officer, you are probably paying a little bit more attention than most folks as far as what other people were doing out and about and around you, but I know a lot of folks seem to think that for whatever reason they can only carry a small, tiny little gun, something like a Ruger LCP, Caltech, one of those type things. In your experience, true, not true, what are your thoughts on service weapons versus, for lack of a better term, mouse guns? As far as concealed carry guns go?
I've got a few. Typically, nowadays, most people have consolidated on, you know, the smartphones, but heck, just a few years ago, I knew when guys were carrying a cell phone, a pager, and then a PDA. So they have all this stuff on their waist, you know. And people get used to seeing bulges and waistbands and really don't think much of it. I know guys that I work with who, previous to carrying Glocks, which we do now, we carried Smith & Wesson 5906s, which, if you've ever carried one, it's a brick of a handgun.
Yeah.
Concealing a pistol is much more about the holster than the pistol, in my opinion, my experience. I have carried inside the waistband, concealed, and jeans and a T-shirt with a 6-inch Ruger Security 6 357 Magnum, which is about the size of an L-frame,
right?
Smith & Wesson. But I know guys that would carry, that have a cheap holster, they got a T-shirt on, they got a big honking, looks like a goiter on their waist, and a lot of people pay no mind to it whatsoever. However, what I tried to do is, the people that are going to be looking are going to be cops and bad guys.
Right.
The people that are a little bit more attuned to that type of thing. I am a big fan of keep the gun hidden, and nobody really needs to know about it unless they need, you know.
Right.
Something's going sideways. It's even gun people. I had an instance last fall It was still like jeans and t-shirt weather here. And I will shoot, I only shoot IPSC or IDPA with the actual gear that I carry. I don't have a race gun. I'll often shoot my duty gear. Sometimes I'll shoot my concealment gear. Well, I ran out to a USPSA match, and, you know, I could carry a comp gun with a scope on it if I wanted to.
Right.
But I was wearing my Glock 19, and my personal favorite inside a waistband holster is a Milt Spark Summer Special.
Right.
So I've got a T-shirt and jeans on. I'm in the hole. Now I'm up. It's my turn to shoot. And one of my buddies that I've been shooting with for years in the club, he looks over, and he's so used to seeing guys wearing the race rigs.
Right.
I'm walking up with jeans and a T-shirt to jump in the shooter's box to make ready. And he physically thinks, or mentally thinks, I guess,
yeah,
wow, Chuck forgot to bring his gun up to the line with him.
That would be embarrassing, too.
Yeah. Well, I had a Glock 19 in an inside the waistband rig, and I had two magazines concealed under my T-shirt. But it's just, over the years, I've learned how to integrate the gun, the holster, the belt, and the clothing together.
Right.
I have a gun guy in a gun situation can't see that I'm carrying a service caliber handgun.
Well, and that's a favorite game that I like to play at the shop I work at is, hey, spot the Glock 34, the two reloads and the knife. Tell me where it is. Oh, you can't. Okay. We're gonna switch directions a little bit. Andy, you had some questions as far as home invasion stuff and all that goes, right?
First of all, I'm glad I get to glean a little information off of a person who is in the business. I guess, Chuck, my first question is, as a homeowner, why would it be a good idea to have an AR as an option next to my bed? And maybe why, and also why would I want a standard capacity magazine in that gun as opposed to, say, three or four limited capacity magazines?
Well, I'm first off, I'll throw out the disclaimer. I'm an NRA Life member. I've been one for at least 20 years. I got my Life membership the minute I could pay for it years ago. I'm a big believer in people owning guns, AR-15s, the magazines that properly go with the gun, which in the case with an AR-15 is typically a 20 or 30 round magazine. I'm a big fan of that, big supporter of it. Why you would want something like that, when we talk about home invasions, the vast majority of home invasions that I see are truthfully dirtbag on dirtbag.
Multiple persons? Would you say that's tends to be the...
Any true home invasion, most burglars, they're going into Joe Average's house. They don't want to go in when they're home. So they will do a ruse. They'll knock on the door. If somebody happens to be home, they're like, is Joe here? No, sorry, I got the wrong house, and they'll be on their way. They want to hit your house on the average people when you're not home. A true home invasion, when they kick your door in and go running through the door like a SWAT team and pulling guns on people and things like that, is typically dirtbag on dirtbag. That I see that in dope houses and things like that. However, in some situations, people who are very well-to-do, who may have a reputation of having guns or jewelry or money at home, and people start to learn about this. That's very, very common in the Vietnamese community. It's very common in several other communities where that type of home invasion, where a legitimate person who's not a criminal is a victim of a home invasion. However, I've seen other cases where you move into a place where a dirtbag used to live, and they think he still lives there.
Whoops.
Mm-hmm. Or they think Joe Dirtbag lives there, and, you know, they think they're hitting 123 Main Street, and you're at 321 Main Street.
Or they're under the influence of some of their products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, and so it's it happens, but it actually, thank God, is fairly rare. If you look at where, like, Tom Givens students need guns, typically mm-hmm. it's in a parking lot, somewhere coming and going to your car. However, to play along, if you are in one of those instances and you're the guy that's getting hit by lightning, it doesn't matter to you that's statistically improbable, because you're right there on the spot. If they're coming through your door, if they're breaking in your door and coming in, it will typically be multiple suspects. They will typically be armed, all of them. That is very, very common. And if you don't have, regardless of combat mindset, if you don't have the tools to handle that problem, then you might come out on the losing end of that.
So I may survive the situation with my 5-shot J frame, but I would probably want something a little more than a 5-shot J frame.
You might not. Depending on the dynamics of the situation, if you're a typical person, you might have anywhere from a 20 to a 50% hit rate. So now you've got one hit or two hits on your bad guys. You got multiple bad guys, and you just ran out of ammo. That's a very bad place to be.
Isn't there a famous story about one of the New York police, one of the guys that was working a stakeout squad or something like that, but ran into someone he was trying to serve a warrant on in an elevator, where a gunfight ensued, and I want to say something like 11 or 12 rounds were fired between both parties, and they were all misses. I can't, for whatever reason, the name escapes me, but that you mentioned hit rates, and it's not kind of like at a square range where you just stand there and you make good solid hits, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can't confirm or deny that, but I can talk about it. Honest to God, here in Topeka, Kansas, home invasion, civilian defense shooting.
And I'm going to cut you off in about 40 seconds, Chuck, and we'll get to it after that, but okay. Please continue.
And ironically enough, that involved a gentleman with a 5-shot J frame. Fortunately for him, it was only one bad guy. But the type of some of the dynamics that I wanted to talk about were almost directly. I have a real scenario that's almost exactly what your theoretical scenario is.
So, okay. Well, what we'll do, do you mind staying over just for another segment, Chuck? Is that all right? I know we originally only planned on two, but you cool with that?
No, absolutely.
Cool. When we come back, we'll finish that story. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck. This will blow your mind. Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We've held over Lieutenant Chuck Haggard from the Topeka, Kansas Police Department. I will get that out right one of these attempts. I haven't done it yet, but darn it, I will. Chuck, if you still there?
I am.
Good. I haven't managed to hang up on you on accident yet. We've got a little bit of time left. If you don't mind continuing your story, homeowner, door kicked down, one suspect, you said, 5-shot J-frame. Please continue.
Well, in this case, it was a gentleman had a number of properties, elderly guy. So because he had a bunch of rentals, the thought was he had a lot of cash. A gentleman knocked on his door, and like a lot of persons' robberies to regular people, this started out as, hey, can you spare some money? A lot of our street robberies are, hey, can you give me a buck? Somebody didn't want to give them a buck. They become very aggressive. Well, this guy knocked on the door. Gentleman wasn't going to help him out, so he forces his way in, beats the crap out of the little old man. Little old man says, well, I got some money in the back bedroom. He goes back where he's got a J-frame that's been loaded since, like, the 60s. he grabs the gun thinking, well, I've got the gun in my hand now. I can shoot this guy out of the house. Threaten him with the weapon, and he'll leave. Well, the bad guy attacks him. So little old man expends all 5 rounds, and these are all contact shots.
So
I just wanted to emphasize that.
So
contact shots.
Within 6 inches or less,
Yes.
Okay.
They're in a fist fight, basically, in which the good guy has a gun in his hand.
No, those are always fun.
Because bad guy doesn't really want to get shot, he's not cooperating.
Hmm.
Shooting people who don't want to get shot is much, much more difficult than people would think from watching movies or going to the range and shooting cooperative cardboard. Well, the gist of the matter is he gets one vital zone hit on this guy out of all of the shots fired.
Okay.
He hits him all five times, but he gets one hit that does anything significant enough to make this guy shut down.
Huh. And for folks that don't know, I mean, I know you and I are both aware of the concept. I know Andy is as well. There are pretty much, and correct me if I'm wrong, three reasons why people will stop what they're doing once they're actually struck by a bullet. And obviously you've got the psychological stop, which is, hey, I don't want to get shot anymore. And mm-hmm. then you've got the, you manage to clip the strings and hit the central nervous system and shut something down important. And that's just, like I said, like a marionette with its strings cut. It's funny how quick someone will drop when you get one of those. Really, the only other one would be blood loss, drop of blood pressure. They pass out, stop what they're doing, pretty much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only caveat being, I mean, if you hit somebody in just the right spot, like right in the ball and socket joint of the hip, typically they're on the ground. Now, mm-hmm. if they got a gun, they can still shoot back. But you're exactly correct in what I've seen. It's either psychological, cardiovascular, or you hit the central nervous system. The thing is psychological, like in this case, I'll just throw out there, most guys would be psychologically stopped when we reconstructed this event. The very first shot hit the guy right at the base of his penis and penetrated and struck him in the pelvis.
Ouch.
But this guy attacked with more vigor upon being shot.
Hmm.
He didn't give up and run away. Now, any guy that listens to where this guy gets shot will probably wince thinking about it, but it didn't slow this cat down a bit.
Well, and then you get into the whole, did he even know he'd been shot or not, which is another pretty common occurrence that comes up. Remind me to tell you a story when we're off the air, Chuck, about the hip and all that, but I won't get into that now, but it's funny you bring that up. I'm not a fan of the pelvic girdle shot,
because
mm-hmm. Like you said, people can still fire, you know, from the ground. But so this gentleman, pretty much his last shot was the one that did it with the guy that...
He shot him upper chest, ended up cutting his aorta, but you've still got a minimum of 15 seconds of oxygenated blood in your body past that point. This guy's got a big adrenaline dump. He's in full fight mode of fight or flight response. Little old man was a World War II vet. They were still fighting, and he started beating this guy with the handgun so hard that he bent the trigger guard on a Model 36.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it was. So he was pistol whipping this guy after he shot him five times. He's pistol whipping this guy repeatedly, trying to save his own life because he's being, you know, continually attacked by this guy that he just shot five times.
Well, and I assume too that the perpetrator didn't survive that.
No, he did not.
Okay, so he was dead on his feet pretty much, and was still managing to take the fight to the good guy, essentially.
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
Right, and that's
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's kind of what happened in the 86 FBI gunfight too. And I get them confused, Maddox or Platt, whichever one it was that got clipped early mm-hmm. and still managed to kill a couple FBI agents after that. A lot of times you can win the gunfight and still lose just in the amount of time it takes for someone to actually notice they've been hit or mm-hmm. show any signs of it. So do you think I guess that would be one of those things where, and I hate to use the term more gun because that sounds kind of cliche, but, you know, obviously the whole don't answer the door if you don't know who it is would have been a good lesson to learn there. But let's say we've not gotten that one, and we've gotten to the point where we've got somebody coming to the house that we don't want. not having the gun on you can be a problem. I would say wouldn't you, as far as having it stored in another location, not necessarily a good idea?
Well, it would, a lot of the things to keep yourself from being, I want to jump back to that one for a minute. Your partner's original point about having a 5-shot gun versus a 20-shot gun, I could guarantee you that our victim in this case would much preferred to continue shooting had he had the capacity to do so. And that was one bad guy. Let's say we had two bad guys.
Right.
Our defender would have been completely overwhelmed and probably wouldn't have lived through the event. Jumping back to your last question, people actually locking their doors. You'd think in 2013 that people would have got the message that keep your doors locked, but they don't. Most common break-in around here is they let themselves through your unlocked door. Then secondarily is door kicks. Most residential houses have very, very cheesy locks and cheesy frames. They are decorative and nothing else.
Right.
Most locks and doors are on the principle of, you ever heard the saying, good fences make good neighbors?
Right.
The door is just to keep, like, your neighbor kids from wandering in because the door's locked and they don't want to break anything.
Right.
I've kicked a lot of doors. I've been a breacher on a lot of doors. Most doors are a one-kick door.
Right.
$15 worth of hardware store, upgraded hardware, and self-installation, and you have a door that will resist a ram on 4 or 5 hits.
And it's funny you mentioned that. What I did in my old home that I no longer live in was one of the, you know, the gate posts or whatever, like the actual L-shaped gate rod that you can sink into the concrete. It's funny what a quarter-inch drill bit through your floor and then bolting that to your door will do. You know, if you want a lock that is hard to get past for not very much, you know, because most folks hit from the knob side as opposed to the hinge side. Well, that'd be a little bit of a surprise right there. So we got a couple, about 2 minutes left, actually, Chuck. Time flies. So general takeaways. What, if you could tell anybody anything, what would it be as far as personal safety?
Well, lock your doors. Spend the $15 on the equipment to beef up your door. If you're going to have a gun, know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think, well, my daddy did, you know, I know guys, my daddy taught me to deer hunt.
I've been shooting squirrels for 20 years.
Yeah,
I should know.
It's not the same thing. My dad was a veteran of Korea and Vietnam, 3 tours. He literally had killed hundreds of people in his life, and he's one of the worst pistol shots I ever met. And
it's funny. Funny you mentioned that. My dad uses a Force to shoot a handgun. It does not believe in sights, but same scenario there, you know.
Well, mine was a Camp Perry shooter and a sniper and things like that. He's a good shot with a rifle,
right?
But you know, everybody could use training. I think that behooves us to get it. I think the well-regulated part of the militia that people overlook is the language back then meant that you were well-drilled and practiced and proficient. And I think a lot of the gun people that espouse the Second Amendment fail to live up to that part of it.
Right. And that's, you know, that's kind of one of the things that we try and push on the show. If I have an agenda, the agenda is carry a gun and know how to use it. But, Chuck, hey, I appreciate you coming on. We're about out of time. Next week, Guns and Colleges to the Two Mix or Not. We'll be talking to Mike Newbern from Student for Concealed Carry. BallisticRadio.com, Facebook/BallisticRadio. Thanks, everyone, for listening here on 55 KRC, the talk station. Thanks, Chuck.
You're welcome.